So Taylor Swift joined TikTok since we did the last episode, which begs the question, is Taylor Swift late to TikTok or is TikTok past its prime on this episode of Of Record?
Of Record is a podcast focused on the marketing and advertising industry from the perspective of two industry experts. Hosts Matt Farrar and Joe Clements are co-founders of Strategic Digital Services, a digital marketing firm based in Tallahassee, Florida, and founded in 2014. I'm Matt Farrar.
I'm Joe Clements.
And I'm Rebecca Romero.
And this is the podcast Of Record.
Hey, listeners, you have me, your host, Joe Clements. We have Jack Reed. Say hello, Jack.
Hello, Jack.
We have Kirsten Onestock.
Hello.
That's not your real last name.
It's close.
It's Onestock. It's a joke.
Also not her last name. Onestock.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's no T in there.
Well,
I've been working here for a while.
I'm not a details guy. I'm big picture.
She's not a stock of wands.
I'm a big picture person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Also a joke people, literally only the people working in this office would get or care about. So we are going to quickly move past that part of the episode and into a couple of TikTok stories. So first story out of The Verge, TikTok reportedly overtakes YouTube in U.S. average watch time. So average monthly watch time on TikTok is now 24 hours per month compared with 22 hours and 40 minutes for YouTube. So this begs the question of what is actually going on. Are people switching where they're consuming video? Are they simply consuming more video? Are different groups consuming more TikTok? There's a little bit of research here, but not a lot. So some of this is going to be speculation on what's going on there. But I was wondering from our resident TikTok extraordinaire, Kirsten, what do you think? Are you listening to or watching more TikTok, less YouTube? Or
I think I watch, oh gosh, I'm so 50-50 because like TikTok is like something I would do to pass like 10 minutes real fast. And YouTube is something I like probably would sit on the couch and watch a couple hours of.
Mm-hmm.
TikTok
sounds like you have a fun and adventurous life.
Oh yeah. Friday night turnips, you know it. With the three cats too. I guess I see TikTok as quick, cheap entertainment. And I actually think YouTube videos have more quality. And maybe as like someone who does produce a lot of video, I see there's more quality and mm-hmm. stuff. And maybe that's why I like to sit down and actually enjoy it on a TV screen or something. Mm. That's just how I feel.
YouTube is transcending.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. And we've talked about this before, is people are watching more and more YouTube on full-size TVs. And YouTube is becoming a very dominant full-size TV by platform. In fact, I think it's going to be the first full-scale, fully targeted, self-serve OTT platform.
Yeah.
Because it has now, and it didn't have this 2 years ago, but it has now the amount of eyeballs to make a run at that.
I think this is very interesting. First of all, these numbers are just from Android phones, anything with Android on it. So that's interesting because I'd love to see if it's greater.
Well, because
on
Apple
iOS.
Is just a black hole now for everything.
Sure is. Well, anything that they don't want.
Yeah.
Anything they're competing with. Yeah, anything they want, they get done. I think this is very, very interesting because it's not a small discrepancy either, and it's not every day that something Google has gets overtaken that's not their chat platform.
Well, so you know what I think is actually happening here? I think what people are doing is they're trading other forms of social media time into TikTok. And because TikTok's video, it's being compared as video to YouTube instead of just has to any other social media platform.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a little bit not an apples to apples comparison what's going on there in terms of calling TikTok video and calling YouTube video.
Oh, yeah.
Because people are just subbing out social media time and putting that into TikTok. Or at least that is my theory.
Yeah, and I don't think the time that YouTube has normally taken still overlaps with the type of time that you would allocate towards something like TikTok or Instagram. I think it's taking away from Snapchat and Instagram. And
yeah.
I think, like we just talked about, YouTube is pushing into its own new uncharted territory.
I think YouTube's competing with other OTT apps and like cable and broadcast television fairly directly at this point. I don't think YouTube is competing with Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or TikTok.
I don't have cable anymore, and I have a couple of streaming apps, but I certainly don't have all of them. But the one that I have been frequenting the most lately is YouTube.
Yeah, me too.
The type of content that's being put on there is greater, and a higher quality, you know, month over month. You know, even the people who started off small, I mean, Marquise Brownlee's a great example, started off making, you know, just little vlogs and are now making really, really highly produced series and reviews.
Well, you will be happy for the story we talk about later when we talk about some new numbers about creators.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, stay tuned, Jack. Stay tuned.
I'll hang around then. How lovely.
So next story out of CNN, Taylor Swift joins TikTok and the Swifties go mad.
Who's that?
Swifties or Taylor Swift?
Neither. I know who they are.
So that's a little bit of a joke, but I think there's one, Taylor Swift waiting this long to get on TikTok is indicative of either she's becoming very slow to respond to where her audience is, one, or two, like she's not. I actually don't have any other interpretation of it. I don't know how Taylor Swift is just now getting on TikTok if she wants to have a younger audience. If all she cares about is older millennial women has her audience, then like it's probably fine. But one of the issues we've talked about with her as a brand is, you know, women under 24, 25 at this point, Taylor Swift is as old as like Madonna was when we were growing up to us.
Are there a lot of people like Taylor Swift on TikTok?
Yes.
Like, is Kanye on TikTok?
Oh, well, maybe not to that. But, like, you know, even, like, Britney Spears had a TikTok before Taylor Swift. And
are they popular?
Well, Britney Spears is popular because it's very deranged content of her spinning in circles. And I love Britney, but, like, I mean, it's more people watching, like, oh, my God, this is a downward spiral for this poor girl. And I think that's why people like her. And that's why her content's really good.
See, to me, and this is my ignorance about TikTok, it seems to be the most of the stuff that I'm shown. I don't know if I've ever been sent a video from an influencer or from somebody of notoriety. It seems to be very grassroots.
Yeah.
And very, you know, reliant on content that, you know, Kirsten makes or somebody here makes. And that's even probably a bad example because we do this for a living. But, you know... the guy on the skateboard, right? He was not a creator for any, you know,
The Ocean Spray guy.
And so I wonder if now people like Taylor Swift are trying to get in after that wave has kind of crested a little
bit. But my argument here would be if you cared about reaching Gen Zs, you would have been on it a year ago or 6 months ago.
Yeah, six months ago.
You wouldn't be this late in the game to it. If you cared about reaching Gen Zs, you probably would have been on sometime last summer.
Is she not reaching Gen Zs?
I don't think so. No.
Really?
No. We think of Taylor Swift, his people late 20s, you know, through late 30s as like, oh, she's this 18-year-old country turned pop star. She's very young. To like Alex... Alex, can you remember a time when Taylor Swift wasn't a big deal?
Not really.
Yeah.
No.
It's just been around his whole life. It's the equivalent of us, Jack, growing up, and like Madonna was big, but we actually lived. Most of our memories are after Madonna was really big in the 80s.
I was actually thinking about something similar to this the other day, and I think the difference, though, is like Madonna didn't have a sustained pop throne during our growing up period, our adolescence and our teen years. I mean, she popped back up a couple times. She one James Bond song.
She would have a couple of songs every couple of years that would get big, and she still had enough notoriety to push things into top 40 radio.
But like, Taylor Swift has this empire and is putting out records that just go platinum in 5 seconds. Like, I still think that, like, she has this sustained success that, well, I'm a little surprised to hear that she's not permeating.
But she's not growing the base.
Yeah.
Evidence of this is Olivia
Rodrigo
is kind of taking that Taylor Swift mantle of young Taylor Swift and giving that to Gen Z women.
I don't know who that is.
Good for you, you look happy.
Yeah, you got it.
That was really great.
You know, she's driving her car in the suburbs and there's stop signs.
Uh-huh.
That song? No.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Driver's license.
That's the first one. Yeah, driver's license.
But I think that
driver's license
with Taylor Swift, like, I mean, even her music that she's put out in Evermore and Folklore is not at all like gauged towards like a Gen Z audience. Like Gen Z is listening to like, I got my driver's license. And like, and Taylor Swift's like, I was going to have a baby with you. Like, it's a little more deeper. And I don't think that's what the audience she's going for. I think maybe she likes growing up with her fandom and the Swifties that she has. And she likes writing for those experiences that they're both going through. Maybe.
Well, so I actually made this criticism of that track for her, which is essentially where she's at generationally. She's going to split her audience in half because there's half of her audience, and maybe it's a different number, half her audience are these like highly educated, like urban career women who aren't married yet, don't have kids. That's her. So she can talk to them, and then, you know, and it may actually be 60% of the audience are like married, have children, are in a different part of their life altogether, but she's still writing songs for the smaller and smaller niche of her audience.
We were just saying before we came in here how the millennial generation is way too big and does not encompass like, I mean,
yeah, it's too broad. Yeah. And that's why it's being like fragmented and like Oregon Trail generation.
Oregon Trail.
That. Yeah. Hey, that's real, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you didn't lose buddies in elementary school to snakes and dysentery, then you
shot
don't
a lot
know
of squirrels. Shot a lot of squirrels.
He had to eat those squirrels too. You know, you can shoot them, but. Oof.
So another story out of eMarketer. Unless we had anything to say else on Taylor Swift, moving on.
No, just surprising. Yeah. I think across the board, a little surprising.
So. Out of eMarketer, Facebook's measurement problems could affect advertisers' media plans and its bottom line. Apple's new privacy rules are making it difficult to tie Facebook data to actions that consumers take after viewing ads on the platform, which could have long-term effects on ad revenues. So we've seen this since iOS 14.5, harder and harder to track. Pixels are becoming more and more, you know, deprecated essentially every month that goes by. Mm-hmm. I don't actually believe what this article is posing is true, because what it's saying is advertisers will move money to other places. The thing is, even being able to track half of your conversions on Facebook is better than being able to track zero of your conversions elsewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
better than, you know, any other company smaller than Facebook is going to have the same trouble with the tracking.
Yeah, and there's no way Facebook's going to let that happen too, right? Yeah. Like they're going to come up with something. They're already working internally on how to.
Well, they have their new API,
yeah.
Which is going to be a pain for advertisers to implement, but it's the I think it's called the ad reporting API.
Yeah.
And we haven't done an implementation for a client on that yet, but that's where they're going, is where the information is collected by the server and then passed back from your website's server to Facebook directly. But it's just another piece of Facebook nightmare compliance for advertisers on the platform.
An ever-increasing nightmare.
Yeah, and so some, you know, some listeners in agency world, advertising world might know this. Listeners outside don't know this. Facebook is such a burdensomely regulated, self-regulated advertising platform at this point. I would guess we spend about 50% of our time actually placing Facebook ads and 50% of our time helping clients deal with Facebook policy issues that are constantly changing and unclear.
Rapidly changing. Probably have changed since we started this podcast.
There's probably an email in my inbox right now.
Yeah.
So any thoughts on that before we move along?
I mean, I'm just thinking bigger picture with it and kind of what we've gone through this past year with 14.5 and with every social media platform's reaction other than Snapchat being negative. And then now we're still seeing the repercussions of that. And of course, this is confusing because 14.5's implementation in the dark of night was a little confusing. And it's interesting that the war kind of never really took off, and instead we're just having more difficult hoops to jump through on
the back
end.
Yeah, I think what's going on is kind of the next era of that opted-in technology is coming, and it'll be here early next year. And then all of this tracking will suddenly become opt-in, but everybody's going to opt in because it's the only way you can see anything for free on the internet anymore.
Has there been any Has there been any news about Android implementing a similar opt-in?
Well, there's Google's system they're working on, and then there's another system of a bunch of independent DSPs, I think, called Unified ID. And so what's coming next year are these two different ways of doing this one-to-one tracking and data reporting that requires individual consent and opt-in. And in Google's side, it goes deeper into like statistical analysis on like cohorts of people. So that's where we're going. It's just not completely ready yet. But I think all that stuff will be scaled out before pixels disappear by the end of next year.
Interesting.
So coming back to content creators, this also out at eMarketer. Survey shows content creators value stability and independence. A survey of over 1,400 content creators shows that the creator economy is becoming a more stable career path is becoming a more stable career path for many to support themselves and their families, even if it takes a long time to get going. The report found that a majority of content creators hope to use their business to support themselves or their families full time. Of those who responded, 36% said their long-term goal was to support themselves with their business. 42% said they support a few people. Only 6% said they were doing it as a hobby. 56% said search engine optimization is the primary way they grow their audience. That is interesting.
Yeah, that's really surprising.
Because it's free.
Yeah.
Because SEO you can do and you can drive traffic. It's really hard to be competitive for free on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter now.
Smart.
Other popular methods, speaking events, hashtags, partnering, and other creators. So not traditional social media content because the algorithms suppress this so heavily now. Mm-hmm. What is interesting is online courses and sponsored content were the most popular ways. Workshops there. So there's a lot of content that's oriented around education. Now,
there's been a massive increase in that I've seen directly in the last 6 months, 10 months. I mean, it has been wild.
Yeah, I get hit with every time I'm on YouTube, that's YouTube is like get rich quick, like fly in this private jet.
Yeah, and even like some of the content creators and like influencers that I follow who may be affiliated with certain companies, like I follow several like photography and tech, you know, blogs. Even they have launched their own, you know, masterclasses for certain things in the last 9 months, which I've been pleasantly surprised about, but it seemed to be overnight. Everybody was like, "Hey, let's flip this switch and start, you know, offering, you know, paid lessons." Mm-hmm. I've done too. So
what do you think is the average number of months it takes for a creator to be able to support themselves just on content?
Kirsten,
I think I would probably say, I'd say probably a year if you did it right and did it well. I mean, you could probably get things done depending on what platforms you're on and what those master classes you are offering. I mean, there's a girl I watch on TikTok who does master classes of balloon decorating, and it's incredibly successful for her. So I guess you just got to find that right audience.
Balloon what now?
Balloon decorating, like for like those arches and stuff they make. Huh. Okay. I guess I'll give her a little shout out. Her name's Houston. We have a party.
Hey, that's a great name.
I know. And I was just like a weird thing that I kind of clicked on. And a lot of people are like, oh my God, I'm doing this for my party. I'm starting a business and I'm doing event decor and stuff. And I mean, it kind of has almost become its own little niche. It's very fascinating. So, I mean, it depends on what you have to offer. And if you're good at teaching other people too, I think it's another element to it.
Alex, any guesses on average?
I cheated. I looked in Slack.
How dare you?
Yeah, I saw it too. All right. So.
Yeah, so the average is 26 months.
Oh, God.
Over 2 years. So that's how long it takes. If you want to build a content business, you need to be doing it nights and weekends.
Yeah.
26 months to support yourself. The average creator made $50,000 per year. But if you were in the game of 4 to 7 years, 100 and 125 was the average range. So it's a long-term process to build this up. So if you're going to do it, you need to plan 2 years of doing it with very little reward, and then another, say, 2 to 4 years of doing it to really start to get a good income out of it.
That's what I say about my stocks.
Stonks. So the other thing, this is the platforms are all competing for creators right now. And one of the reasons I think it takes so long for creators to get going is because they are, why the platforms are competing for creators, once on a platform, the creators are competing with the platforms for revenue and for attention. So if you're building your business on YouTube, if you're building it on Facebook, Facebook and YouTube don't have an incentive to give you very much free reach. So you're competing directly with them, but Facebook and YouTube, for example, do want you on their platform because you're what draws users. So I think there's this tension there. And I think what you're going to see with this creator economy is once you have the first open source like crypto network,
yeah,
where it's based on crypto microtransactions that can be fractions of a penny, you're going to see creators go from, you know, taking 2 years to make $50,000 to, if you have anything decent and people can find you, you could make $300,000 in your first couple years, because you don't have the platform acting as an intermediary, either taking a piece as pass-through or suppressing your reach.
Is TikTok so successful because it is the first major social media platform that has been created and really taken off during the creator boom? Or is the next one going to be? Because, I mean, all of the ones on Facebook.
I think the problem is, I think that's helped TikTok.
Yeah.
But I think TikTok isn't going to be the next, you know, this platform that does this with crypto, because, like, it's a proprietary platform. It's going to be something that totally probably doesn't exist yet, or to the degree that it exists, it's in its infancy.
Because everything else that's existed has either existed for 16 years or, you know, has been a social media platform that was geared towards posting pictures, yeah, or sharing music. Then if the next big one is catered towards and has built in from the ground up this foundation of helping creators make money,
yep,
that could be huge.
Well, I think what it is, it's a distributed autonomous organization, right? A DAO. And so the way the DAO works is the people who put it together are putting it together either because they are creators in their own right, or like they're just interested in building this world.
Mm-hmm.
The transactions that happen, well, so first thing, nothing would be free on it. Everything's running on a, even if it's an infinitesimal fraction of the equivalent of a penny,
mm-hmm,
everything's running on a transaction. The DAO itself takes a piece that the house gets to maintain itself and, you know, grow the network, pay for the servers, whatever. And then everything else is just passing through directly between the consumer and the creator, which is going to give creators 2, 3, 4, 5 times more revenue for the same work. Now, the thing that's, you know, you don't know there is, what are the discovery algorithms going to be like on a DAO? And the way I suspect it will work is this is what Twitter's trying to do, is everybody will be able to kind of port in their own discovery algorithm to filter through the network.
Hmm.
So you won't just be given the discovery algorithm that's best for the corporation. You'll have your option and you'll just choose what kind of tunes it in for you best. And I do think that's going to be one of the things, and it'll be 10, 15 years from now, but people start to become aware of their preferences in algorithms.
Oh, sure. I mean, like, look at what TikTok's doing.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
we've got our resident witch talker in here.
Yeah,
so.
But you're still training it, but you don't exactly know what you're doing when you're training it.
Yeah.
In 10 to 15 years, I think people will know, they will have certain, you know, they will know the technical names of the data mining processes that are going on behind the scenes to surface what they like.
Kind of like when you download Tidal and it makes you select 15 different music genres and artists you like,
yep,
and then it formulates your own little.
Well, I mean, look, because the problem is tastes aren't stable, right? So how do you account for this? And so one is, well, if you like those 15 songs, you want to have some time decay on it, right? So like the songs you select today decay in preference over a certain amount of time so that other things can be inserted into the algorithm.
Yeah.
And how much do you prioritize something new that you indicate that you like versus a whole history of like years of pattern?
Yeah.
Right? So there's all these questions implicit when you're making an algorithm to try and discover what's actually going on in your mind. You know, some people are going to prefer very stable algorithms that, like, what I liked last year is what I'm going to like this year. Show me more. Some people are going to want a lot more discovery and a lot less stability. They're going to want new things being injected all the time that they can select from.
A little bit of everything,
yeah,
all the time.
Yeah, a little bit of everything all the time. Apathy is a tragedy and boredom is a crime. But with your personalized algorithm,
you'll never be bored.
You'll never be bored.
Therefore, you will be compliant.
Which is kindness.
Anyways.
Yep. All right. So Alex is either stretching his hand or telling me there's 5 minutes left. It's somewhat unclear to me the way he does it.
He may want a high five.
Oh, well, he's doing like the, you can see this on
the.
Oh,
he's starfishing. And,
yeah. He's with his like, hand. Yeah, like Suicide
it's
Squad.
It's blinking.
Oh, yeah. Starro.
Yeah.
So great.
All right. Anything before we close?
Hey, Joe, what's something people are sleeping on this week?
Ah, the sleeper.
I don't have one, so sorry to put you on the spot.
Yeah,
but let's,
I mean, I actually have a couple.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, I always have some.
Pick your favorite.
I think people are sleeping on the degree of actual apathy that exists about continuing COVID outbreaks. And so I am relatively bullish on what Q4 is going to look like for restaurant and retail and even travel.
Oh, you think yeah. It just keeps going?
Well,
I think
you know, we'll be at Mu or Phi or whatever Greek letter of the alphabet we're going to be on by December.
Well, did you see the WHO said, you know, buckle up. This is going to be, it will mutate like the flu. It is not the flu, but it will like. It's what we've been saying all along. It will continue to, this is going to be something we deal with. And
And so I
think, is why vaccines are important.
I think people are coming to terms with this. Like, it's going to be around. You got to mitigate it how you think is best. If you're ill or immunocompromised, you probably need to stay at home. Otherwise, you know, you're going to fly on the plane, wear your mask, you know, you're going to do the things you wanted to do anyway. And you know, people will get sick, but assuming they're vaccinated, most people seem to be surviving, and it'll just be a part of life. And you know, it'll be in the news, but like Q4 is probably just going to roll on with, you know, decent economic intensity.
Yeah.
They said in a podcast I was listening to, cannot remember it.
Maybe you can't trust podcasts.
Yeah.
It's been Motley Fool, but they were saying that it's going to probably be very bullish for retail and restaurants.
Let's go.
For the holidays, especially, because a lot of people are like, I'm going to Cheesecake Factory.
No
like,
one's canceling Disney trips either.
Someone
this
should
year.
Cancel Cheesecake Factory, though.
Yeah.
That's a hot take, but I'll stand by it.
You don't like their Bible of a menu?
No, I don't.
Kirsten, do you have anything people are sleeping on? Casper mattresses.
Yeah. Yeah, purple mattresses.
Purple mattresses.
We're not sponsored by
Dang,
purple.
Not even Casper. It's gone straight to purple.
I don't have anything really. I'm trying. I can't
that's
even
all right.
think of anything.
I've got one.
Okay.
Joe, what's the last movie you saw in theaters?
Do not remember.
Kirsten, producer Alex.
Black Widow.
You saw Black Widow in theaters?
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I don't want to say it, but A Star is Born in 2018.
No, that's fine. I mean, that proves a point here. Yeah. Shang-Chi, Marvel's first non-sequel, prequel, new standalone storyline came out this past weekend and shattered box office records for Labor Day, which also shattered my perception of what the theaters were going to be up to this fall. You have some pretty big films coming out this fall. You've got James Bond, which supposedly came out 4 years ago, but is somehow also coming out in October. Daniel Craig's last foray into 007 world. You've got a new Spider-Man. You've got
Spider-Man.
Peter Spider-Man.
Tobey Maguire is back.
You've got The Matrix 4. You've got basically any movie you thought was really great in 2003 or 2004, we're circling back to. You've got The Eternals. You've got
Batman.
Some. Do what?
The Batman.
That comes out next year. Don't
wait,
do that.
Yeah, no.
It's going to be a while, Kirsten, on the Batman.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry to break your
crap.
Heart.
You've got some pretty big tentpole summer block. Blustery movies coming out this fall, and I thought for sure it was going to be this thing where people were going to be like, man, if I can't stream it, I'm not going to go. But by golly, if people didn't go to the theaters in droves on Labor Day weekend to see a movie, they had no
and
idea what was going to give to them.
That my thing that people are going to like, they're just going back to their life.
Yep.
It's a risk that is factored into everyday living. People are doing what they're going to do to mitigate
Are you saying people are sleeping on COVID?
Well, look, I mean, I think...
Whoa.
I'm just messing
well. I mean,
you,
here'd be my case, right? I think people have come to terms with what the actual risk is for them or their families, and are now living in accordance with that risk. And most people have weighed that, like, the risk doesn't justify living this isolated, miserable life in your house where you rely on Amazon and Instacart to bring you everything you need.
But the people who are going out in droves weren't really necessarily doing that in the first place. I mean,
the type of crowd, the type of numbers you're seeing and things, it's not just the people who are never
locking
down. Oh,
no, for sure.
Down.
For sure. You've got a good mixed bag. I mean, they made $70 million this past weekend. Like, that was a good mixed bag of people who are over it and people who have checked a box and said, like, I got my vaccine and now I want to go back out and play. So
I mean, despite the media's best efforts to keep everybody quarantined and locked in their house.
Yeah, they're trying.
They're trying, but it's not working.
Yeah. I mean, some people should still be locked in their homes, but that's for a different podcast, I believe.
The Lock You in Your House podcast.
Producer Alex, are you sleeping on anything? You think people are sleeping on anything?
Not right now.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. Joe, you want to end this podcast?
Sure. Thank you for listening, everyone. As always, leave us a review in your podcast application of choice. It's funny, we don't call them applications anymore. Just say apps.
I know. It's so much more fun to say applications.
Applications sound so much more
fun. Can you open that application for
Please.
Me real quick?
In your podcast app of choice. And until then, we will be back next week with more news and probably a lot more opinion than even news in next week's episode. So until then, goodbye.
Peace.
Of Record is hosted and produced by me, Matt Farrar, Joe Clements, and Rebecca Romero, with producer Alex Reinhardt. Of Record is recorded at Graybridge Studios in Tallahassee, Florida. This episode was edited by Alex Reinhardt. Our theme music is composed and performed by Rob Goki. Special thanks to our entire team at SDS here in Tallahassee. You can see more information about the show at our website, podcastofrecord.com. As always, we'd appreciate your reviews and ratings in your podcast app of choice. Those ratings and reviews help more people discover the show, which helps us keep delivering quality content each week. Thanks for listening.